This is the Genuine Humans podcast, brought to you by Social Element. I'm Tamara Littleton.
And I'm Wendy Christie.
In our podcast, we'll discover the stories of the leaders behind the brands and the trailblazers who are making a real difference in our industry. We'll delve into how they got to where they are today.
And we'll hear about the genuine humans who supported and influenced them along the way.
Welcome back to Genuine Humans, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Wendy Christie. Wendy, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm just getting over the 100-year cold. Oh. How are you doing?
No, that's been
I'm going in the right direction. It's good.
It's been about 2 weeks, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's gonna bring a little bit to the podcast, I think, so it's all good. So we're also extra happy today to welcome a very special genuine human guest, Lauren Spearman, and she's joining today. Lauren has previously worked at Sky, Benefit and Made.com and is going to talk about that as well. But Lauren is a brand consultant now and a content creator on TikTok, which I want to hear all about. Welcome to the podcast, Lauren Spearman.
Thank you both for having me. Really excited to be here.
Well, we're going to jump straight in and I want to hear about... Well, I want to hear about your early career, if that's all right, and how you got into the industry and also then bring us up to speed with what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I accidentally, I guess, fell into the industry. I actually started, after I left uni, I actually worked for the National Blood Service. I was a PA and a receptionist, pretty terrible at both, but I left uni. I think there's a lot of pressure on us when we're super young to know exactly what we want to do at 18, at 21. And I just wasn't that person. Uh-huh. And having recently turned 40, I still don't know what I want to do with my career. So I did a stint at the National Blood Service, which I loved. I met some great people. And then eventually I got a call one day from a recruiter who was like, oh, I'm recruiting for some roles at Sky, sales roles. And I was like, oh, I don't want to sell Sky boxes. I would be terrible at that. He's like, no, it's actually selling advertising. And I lived in Manchester at the time and I was like, sod it, I'm just going to go for the interview, and met the two people that would be my boss. I had kind of two bosses and they were wonderful. And I was like, I still came away from the interview not being sure what the job was, but I was like, okay, I just really want to work with these people. So I ended up working for Sky up in Manchester. I was in the TV sponsorship sales team. So I was an assistant in the team, and we would go out to agencies or brands direct to sell TV sponsorship. And I learned a lot. It was such a wonderful place to work. I was there about a year and a half, 2 years. And then I came back home for the weekend. I'm from Chelmsford in Essex originally. And I was like, what am I doing up in Manchester? Like, I moved there having known no one, and I'd met lovely people, but I just felt like something was calling me back down south. I spoke to my bosses and I was like, I don't want to leave the company, but I just know that I don't want to live in Manchester anymore. So they very kindly spoke to someone where I transferred into the digital team down there. And at the time, this was a very big thing to go from TV into the digital. The internet's going to be the big thing. Go and, like, chase that. And I think as I probably go on, chasing kind of newness is probably a theme throughout my career. So yeah, I moved down. I stayed another year and a half at Sky and eventually kind of transitioned out of selling TV sponsorship into digital advertising. And then when I was at Sky, we looked after third party sites as well. So two of those sites were Netmums and Baby Center, and I specialized in selling advertising for those. And then I think I was probably about 25, 26. And I look back now and it was complete ignorance, but I was like, oh, I'm sure there's better jobs than this. Maybe I can try something different. And I looking back now, I realize what a great employer Sky was, and I speak really fondly of them. I have nothing bad to say, but I think I was just ready for a change. So I joined a startup. I'd gone from Sky, which is obviously an absolutely huge corporation, to a startup where there was four people in the business, and the startup was selling advertising still, but for fashion and beauty blogs. Mm-hmm. So this was back in like 2009, 2010, I think. And I remember going to brands being like, there's these new things, they're called bloggers, and they're a way to get your brand in front of people, and really having to sell in what a blogger was, which now sounds ridiculous, but 15 years ago, that wasn't the case. So I worked at that startup for a year, and I never quite felt comfortable in the role, and I just don't think I was very good. I think, if I'm honest, I think, you know, I felt like I was blagging the whole time. And sure. You know, when you have that feeling in your gut every day when you go to work, I was like, I'm just going to get found out. Luckily, my old boss from Sky got in touch, and she was like, Netmums are taking their advertising in-house. Do you want to come and work, you know, with me? And I was like, yeah, of course. What's the interview process? She's like, no, I'm offering you the job. Do you want to come over? So I did. I stayed at Netmums in the sales manager there for 4 years. I loved working there.
Yeah.
It was, I'm sure we'll probably come on to this later on, but I have been so fortunate to be surrounded by so many amazing women in my career. And the founders of Netmums were absolutely that. They were so supportive, really championed us. We were doing really well sales-wise. And it was just like such a nice, nice job. I had a great boss, and we're still in touch now. She was fantastic. As my leaving present, she bought me The Secret. Have you ever read that book?
Oh, no.
It's a really good read. I was there 4 years. And then I kept going to meetings with brands. And I was like, I want to sit your side of the table. I was working mostly like brand managers, client side. I was like, I don't quite know what your job is, but I know I'm interested.
Mm.
So I went home and made a list of companies that I really admire from the outside, you know, as a customer. And one of them was Benefit Cosmetics. I always thought their marketing was just so kitsch and fun. And I just thought, what a fun place to work. And I noticed I followed the head of digital on Twitter. This is back when it was okay to use Twitter. And I just reached out to her and I was like, I'm really curious about your role. You know, what does it involve doing? What does the team look like? I'm thinking of changing careers. And she was really kind and sent me a bit of an overview of what her role does, what the team does. And then about 6 weeks later, she came back and she was like, are you still looking for a job? I might have something. So that was a kind of in there. I still had to go through the interview process like anyone would. But I got a role there within the digital team. And I was then overseeing paid social, which... that was the kind of connection of the advertising side of things. So I joined the team, saw a bit of a gap when I was there for some influencer work. So again, this was like 2016. So
yeah,
influencers were a thing, but it's still nowhere near as established as it was today. And they were gifting influencers product, but that was about it. And I thought, hang on a minute, I've got a bit of experience in the influencer world. I can see that this is where, you know, there's a new area of marketing that's kind of coming out here and I want to get involved in that. So I offered to write an influencer strategy and kind of ended up leading that for a couple of years. And it was so fun. I think my background in sales meant I loved to negotiate with talent whenever we were working on commercial projects. I was like, right, roll my sleeves up. Let's have a chat about money. And I just love those conversations. Did all sorts of weird, wonderful fun. We worked across everything from social. Yeah, so organic social, paid social. We helped with influencer events. We did all sorts of really, really fun stuff. And then about 3 years in, I think I naturally was chomping at the bit to head up a team.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like I was ready. And there was only so much I could talk about eyebrows. Like 50% of our content had to be about eyebrows.
Was that a target? You had an eyebrow target.
Target, you get creative. We once set up a series called Extreme Brows. So the notion was like, you didn't have to go to extreme lengths to do your brows. You can just go to a benefit counter. So we ended up doing this series on social. We did a Facebook Live every couple of weeks where my colleague and I did our brows in extreme situations. So we genuinely did a Facebook Live abseiling down a building while doing our eyebrows.
Oh my God, I love that.
We did them on a jet ski. We did these stupid things, but it was very, very good fun.
That's amazing.
And so I kind of used my tactic of approaching a brand direct for a role in order to help get my next role. So I had... not long before bought my first flat, and just with anyone that buys a first flat, all of a sudden become obsessed with interiors. I spent so much time on Pinterest. It was ridiculous. And I saw made.com at the time, the furniture company. They were all over the tube, yeah. Always really heavy tube advertising. And I was like, this seems like a brand that I'm interested in. I was a customer. So I had a bit of an unconventional approach. I was like, how can I make a contact there? And it seemed quite seamless rather than ask for a job. So I pulled together a pitch where I pitched to the team that Benefit and Made did a collaboration of furniture for dressing rooms. So, you know, we were seeing beauty influencers have big, beautiful dressing rooms, mirrors, lights, all kind of sorts of dressing tables. And I was like, that could be my in. It could help me make a contact. So that's exactly what I did. I went in, had a conversation. Like in hindsight, they were never going to go with it, but it just meant that I had a few connections within the business. So then, within a few weeks, there was a role that came up and I used that as a bit of a kind of hook in my cover letter to say, look, this is how I'm really interested in working with MAID. This is what I've done previously. And yeah, that got me an interview. And it was really interesting because I talk a lot in my content on TikTok about interview process. And I think I absolutely flustered the first one, but right. I addressed it in the second. I think I very much realized that the woman interviewing me for the job at MAID would have been hiring lots of experienced heads of. And I think when you're stepping up from manager to head of department, that can feel like a big jump. So yeah, I addressed that in the interview and I was like, look, I will not be the most experienced person you interview, but I know I'll be the most passionate. And I was there 3 years and I loved that job. I was so passionate, ambitious. I headed up influencer marketing there. I got a promotion to head up socials as well. And then I got another promotion to head up the PR team. So I ended up managing three teams of around 30 people in total. And then, yeah, eventually I felt like it was naturally my time to leave. I thought, right, I'm going to challenge myself. And I thought, have I worked for really good brands? Like, am I a good marketer or have I worked for good brands?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I'm just going to go to a much smaller brand and see what happens. And I went to a pet insurance company. So my kind of view was, no one cares about insurance, but they care about their pets, right? So as a marketer, you absolutely pull on those heartstrings, that emotional connection. So I joined there as head of comms and under a really wonderful CMO, who unfortunately left within about 4 weeks of me joining the business.
Oh, that's a shame, yeah.
I think it kind of became quite apparent that I don't think the business was quite ready for my role yet. So as part of a restructure, I wasn't hit with a restructure, but I kind of put myself forward and said, look, I think, you know, I don't think this role is right for me. I don't think it's right for the business, where the business is at the moment. So yeah, I handed in my notice after 3 months, which takes a lot of soul searching to know if that's the right thing to do. I think we see this thing of like, you've got to stick a job out for a year, even if you hate it, because it will look good on your CV. But I think I realized that if I stay for a year, I wasn't going to get anything worth putting on my CV.
Mm.
So yeah, left that. I left after 6 months in total because of my notice period, which brings me to last summer where I was like, I've got all this experience. I'll easily find a job. That did not happen.
It's been tough. Yeah.
Queen of the silver medal. Got down to the final two for a few roles, but always kind of picked at the post of that classic, someone with more experience. But actually in that experience of job searching, I found that hiring practices, the quality of the process has really kind of fallen down. I was getting ghosted a lot. I was having first interviews and then nothing. I was not getting feedback. I was waiting sometimes months in between interviews. And I just thought something didn't feel right. I also noticed a massive rise in tasks as part of the interview process, which I totally understand. When you get to a certain level, there'll be some kind of task presentation, that's fine. But there were, in some cases, people asking for tasks just to apply for a role.
Wow.
And also not tasks that I felt were appropriate. So the final kind of straw for me was I was at the final stage interview for a role. And they asked me to do an entire marketing strategy. They wanted then a full campaign plan, a full SWOT analysis of all their competitors. There was basically five different tasks. And I think initially I was like, okay, do you know what? Sod it, I'm going to do it. I want a job, it's fine. And then I pushed back and was like, can you give me some of the supporting material? You know, if you want me to do some analysis, can you give me some what campaigns you've done or something I can analyze? And I was just told, no, just go with it.
Wow, it's just like free consultancy without any information.
Yeah, absolutely that. And I felt so alone. I was like, how have I got this experience? And I felt a lot of shame that I wasn't able to get a job. So I just turned to TikTok one day. I don't know what came over me, but I just made a video saying that I've pulled out of a role today because I was asked this, this, and this. And I just, something in my gut didn't feel right. And that video got a couple of 100,000 views. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm not alone. And maybe there is something here. And a lot of the comments were like, I'm experiencing this. And I just started speaking up about my experience. And I think within 6 weeks, I gained something like 15,000 followers. And I was like, oh, okay, this is definitely not me. And it's part of a wider problem.
So yeah, I just became very vocal very quickly about the process and just accidentally fell into being an advocate for improving hiring practices within the marketing industry. So what then ended up happening was my job search turned into a 5-month job search. And actually I was offered the chance for some contract work and I was like, sod it, I'm going to go with it. And that has accidentally fallen into me being self-employed. And I've just hit just over my 1-year anniversary now. I have learned so much in the last year, than probably I have the last few years combined, about myself, about what I want to do with my career, and also like a very different way of working. I think I've only ever known a 9-to-5. So to work on different projects, work with different kind of clients, work different hours, it's been really interesting. And yeah, so over the last year, I've worked with several really great clients, everything from interiors to beauty to tech. It's been really interesting covering everything from creative direction, looking at brand strategy, social media consultancy. Social media is absolutely my baby. It's the thing that I love and it's what I'm always coming back to. But I just told myself, say yes in the first year and see what happens and see where it takes me. See what people hire me for, see what I love doing, see how I like spending my time. Yeah, so now I kind of had a good first year and now I'm into that panic of the second year. Will it be as good? Will I ever work again?
That tricky second album stage.
Self-doubt is phenomenal. But yeah, and I know also navigating, you know, I've continued to make content about careers on TikTok and now more recently on LinkedIn. I really want to improve hiring practices. I advocate for salary transparency. I want there to be more care in the workplace. I think we spend so much of our time at work with the people we work with. And it is, you know, we can't separate work and home life in the same way that perhaps, you know, our previous generations could. So yeah, I've accidentally fallen into this huge like passion of wanting things to be better at work and seeing where that takes me as well.
Well, I think accidental or not, it's so needed and you're starting such an incredible movement. I think it's all power to you. And I love seeing all of your content everywhere and seeing how, you know, people are picking it up and you're being a real champion. So, so thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that, Lara. And we'll probably dig into that a little bit more in a few minutes. But before we do, I'd love to sort of go a bit further back. You grew up in Chelmsford, is that right?
Yes.
So I'd love to hear more about your childhood, what you were like as a kid, and if there are some of the themes that you've talked about, like chasing the new, for example, were these things that you could recognise from when you were little?
Yeah, so I grew up in a very female-heavy household. So I'm one of three sisters, so parents, three daughters. Yeah, I guess that's probably sparked my theme of always wanting to surround myself with great women. And yeah, had a very, very happy childhood. I was the middle child, so we can pick that part. The middle child's fine. And there's actually quite big age gaps with me and my sisters, right, which is quite interesting. But we got on really well. We still got on really well. We're all very different. But yeah, lots of fun and kind of happy memories. And I think my mum was really ambitious at work. And I think I have definitely taken that on. Mm-hmm. I remember I was very shy as a child and it's still something I battle against all the time. So like if anyone calls me confident and I'm like, you have no idea how much work I've done.
Masking on a daily basis. I feel you.
Yeah, absolutely. But my mum, I remember something she always says to me whenever I was being a bit nervous, she would like hold both my hands and she's like, right, repeat after me. My name is Lauren Spearman and there's no one else in the world better than me. And she would always like try and instill that comment. And I don't know why it's getting me upset, but it's still something I think I carry through now of like, just like that, trying to get that self-belief in myself because it's, especially since going self-employed, it's like been such a mental challenge to kind of think, well, why would anyone want to hire me? Or, you know, there's so many amazing people. Why would they choose to work with me? So yeah, that's, I sometimes still do that in the mirror.
Well, why not? You know, there is no one better than you.
Oh, I knew I was going to cry. I could feel it coming.
you know, I learned this amazing thing from social media, obviously, about looking in the mirror and talking to yourself the same way that you talk to your pets. So you just go, look at your little cute face. And if you do that on a daily basis, honestly, it makes you feel a lot better.
I've done that before, actually. I did years ago, I did some like inner child work where you talk to yourself. You kind of say, what would 6-year-old you want to hear, or how would they want to be spoken to? And it's, I guess it's quite similar to that. And it's really powerful, which is probably why I've not done it since, because it's like, oh, it opens up a can of worms.
Almost too much.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's quite heavy.
And other than your mom and your sisters, did you have other people that you particularly looked up to when you were little?
Yeah, so definitely, yeah, my parents, my grandparents for sure. So I've still got one set of grandparents. They're 91 and 90. They're just phenomenal. And I think the theme of kind of family life was always humour. So the way we dealt with anything and still do is always humour. And even more recently, my little sister last year got diagnosed with cancer.
I'm so sorry.
And she's now cancer-free, but it has been a wild year. And actually, that as you can't experience, I mean, I obviously didn't experience firsthand, but being, you know, a sister, you know, having that, I think you can't be close to someone like that and it not completely change your perspective on life. I think it's absolutely made me worry far less. It's made me, you know, embrace change or, yeah, kind of stay in the present a lot more rather than worry about the future. But yeah, even when she got diagnosed, like the way we dealt with it as a family was to bring in humor, which is so morbid, but also like how there's no guidebook on how you handle that, is there?
Absolutely, yeah.
So humor's been a big theme. I guess growing up as well, definitely teachers. I've had some really amazing teachers throughout my school life, and then women in my career. I think I've naturally leaned towards having mostly female bosses, and I've had some incredible bosses, but also incredible peers. I think we often will talk about incredible bosses, and that's great, but also just the people that we surround ourselves with on the day to day and we do the work with. I've been fortunate to be part of some really great teams, and I think in all honesty, going self-employed, my biggest fear was not being part of a team, because I love managing people, but I also love being part of a team. I love that camaraderie, I love the bond, I love all of that stuff. So I have been quite focused, I think, a little bit in when I work on projects, I often don't work alone. I bring in people to work with me on things, because I think, one, we deliver a better quality of work, but also it's far more enjoyable. And that person that you can just, you know, especially if you're working remotely for so long, pick up the phone and dissect something, or when you're having a wobble, have someone to have that conversation with. I think that's always been really important.
Very much so. And is there anyone in particular that you'd like to shout out for having been particularly influential or helpful?
I always shout at one woman that always springs to mind is my boss from Benefit Cosmetics. So Michelle Studley, who I am still really close friends with. I'm actually seeing her this evening. I'm seeing all of the team this evening. She is like such a great example of wonderful leadership. She was really... How do I describe her? She's a really calm person. So I think when you talk about leadership, we often have this opinion of someone really loud, and she's not that. She's a much more reserved, but she has so much passion. She had so much care for us. And I saved an email from her. I think she sent within my first couple of months of me joining the business. And just, we had a conversation. I was saying, I think with any new business, you join and you're like, oh, it's so overwhelming, a new industry, new role, it always takes a little while to bed in. And I think we had a conversation about that, and she just sent me this amazing email that I still weirdly look at every now and then as a kind of reminder. And she was just like, we call it the benefit bubble, you know, there's lots to take in, it will take a while, you're doing great, here's some really good feedback. And I just thought she went out of her way to do that, and I felt like that a lot within our careers. And even when I was there and there were times where, you know, I didn't do the right thing, I messed up or made a mistake or whatever, I would never get a telling off. Like, we'd obviously have to have a conversation if I cocked up on something, but it was always like, okay, what are we going to learn? What are we going to do differently? How are we going to fix it? And yeah, I think she also had this wonderful balance of
being, it was clear she was our boss, but also our friend. Like there was this unknown boundary that we always like, we were always like friendly, but you knew never to cross the line. And she, yeah, she was just really wonderful. So I think I give a lot of credit to how, what I've learned about leadership and how I want to show up as a manager from her, for sure. And then also another boss, Nikki Herring, who was my boss at Netmums, who I worked with at Sky as well. She was fantastic. She was the one that got me The Secret. She always really championed me as well. And I think the best bosses are ones that aren't threatened by your ambition. They are, you know, they harness that and they really push you.
I'm going to jump back into the sort of the work side of things, because you said that, you know, social media is your passion. And obviously you've been a real sort of pioneer in the influence space as well. Do you think that brands have kind of really embraced the power of social, or do you think that we've still got a lot of a way to go to sort of get brands on board, as it were?
Yeah, I still think we've got a hell of a long way to go. I think whenever we, I don't know if you've noticed this, but whenever we talk about brands on social doing good, the same brands will come up all the time. Ryanair, Duolingo, Liquid Death, and they are doing incredibly well. But if we can only name three brands that are doing well on social, that kind of says a lot. And the social media has been around for almost 20 years, but we still see it as a bit of a nice to have. I even had a conversation with someone yesterday who'd suggested to the CMO that they needed perhaps someone full time working on social. And their response was like, don't tell me how to do my job. And it's like, I think that we see this a lot of, we put the most junior people in the social roles because it's just like, oh, well, they can just dick around on Instagram and post pictures. And so it's why within the content I make on TikTok, I try to show a different side of social. I try to show the thinking behind it, what goes into working with a creative team, the process, the strategy, the thinking, not just the end result. I think so. Yeah, I still think I would love to see brands take social a little bit more seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think the brands that are definitely winning in that space. I think I would love to see, even earlier today, I saw an internship that was advertised and it was overseeing absolutely everything on TikTok, TikTok shop, strategy, affiliates. And I was like, this is an internship that you're giving someone, which could be a huge channel for your business. And yeah, I think we see that a lot. I also think, and it's a discussion that I'm seeing a bit more recently, the world of social and influencer marketing is very female dominated. And those spaces often get discredited and I see it time and time again when I post social roles. So my audience on TikTok is 90% women. Yet when I post about social roles, it's the men that come through in the comments and absolutely belittle those roles. I have one guy who's consistently commenting. Even yesterday, he was like, it's just a colouring in role.
Wow.
You know, and I had a conversation with him the other week. I'm just on comments. And I was like, oh, wait, what social role do you do? And he's like, I don't work in social. I'm like, well, you've got a lot of opinions on it. And I think there is a lot of, like, we've kind of almost infantilized social and discredited it as not this thing. Also, I think because a lot of people that work in social have fun, seem to be having fun. And there's sometimes a correlation between, well, if you're having fun, it can't be work. And I mean, working at Benefit Cosmetics absolutely disproved that. Our company motto is laughter is the best cosmetics. So we absolutely have fun at work and we got results with it. So I think there's this trifecta of it being seen as, oh, it's just a silly little job for women. It being seen as it can't be work because it seems to be fun. And then also just this still lack of understanding of what social can do for your business.
Which, and, you know, having run the agency for like 22 years, I do actually agree with you that, you know, I think there's still many times I still feel that we are at the early days of the industry and we shouldn't be. And I think during the pandemic, there was more focus on social as a channel.
Absolutely.
Because it became the main channel, so it felt like it was suddenly being moving up the chain in terms of sort of conversations. But I do agree that we've still got a way to go, but influencer is, you know, it's so powerful, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting when we say, talking about a way to go, when I talked about the different areas I work in, and I think as I've been navigating what I want to do and what I want to sell myself as a consultant,
I think at first I was like, oh, social media is too niche and there's not going to be enough work. And then actually I'm like, when I look at what I do with clients, it's not just I present a one-page deck and off you go. There's so much that goes into it that actually, you know, dissecting things like firstly the strategy, resourcing of the team, operations, all the process, then actually how do you bring in influencer marketing into that? There's so much to get into. And I think that's kind of helping cement the direction that I want to head in, those kind of big juicy projects.
Definitely. But you're also still sort of pushing for the industry to change. So in terms of like hiring practices, you were talking about that. So let's get down to the nitty gritty of like, what are some specific changes that you believe the marketing industry needs to make in its hiring practices?
Yes. Now, salary transparency is like probably number one. It's the thing that I talk about the most. I think it is so beneficial for a candidate when they're applying for a role to know what the salary is. Yes, we obviously want to hire candidates that are passionate about the business and they're interested in the role, but we're also hiring candidates that have mortgages and rent to pay. And to be naive to the fact that salary isn't one of, if not the most important part of a role, you know, a job is a value exchange. Mm. And I think it's important that the candidate knows what the exchange is. I think there's a direct correlation between the effort that you put into writing a job description and the quality of the candidate. So it's really basic things, but you know, when we say hybrid working, what does that look like? Where is the office? Is it fixed days in the office? Is there flexibility? Are there core hours? Like all of those little things, the more information you can give, the more a candidate can see, oh, actually they want me in the office 4 days a week and that's not something I want to do. Or, oh, actually they want me in on a Wednesday. I don't know, like for some reason that doesn't work. Whatever that is, it helps you make a bit more of an informed decision. I also think it's really important, and I don't see many businesses do this, but when we talk about the role, there's obviously always the bump at the start about the business. But I think it's really beneficial to share a bit more about the team and the setup. I think it's great to know who you're reporting into. If you've got direct reports, how many direct reports? Can you share what the job title is? Just a little bit of context so that, you know, if you are writing a cover letter, there's just more to more to work with. Really thinking about the roles and responsibilities. I think one thing I am aware of, I see a lot of at the moment is, I wouldn't say a lack of consideration, but we see these roles and responsibilities that I just think, do you seriously think one person can do all of that and do it well? Are you setting the candidate up for success? I think it's really clear. I also know, you know, as a business grows, they can get more specialist roles. So, you know, social role specifically, if you're hiring one social person, it's going to be a general social media manager that can do a bit of everything. As the business grows, it might be something a bit more specific, like a strategist or a content creator. But really, yeah, really think about the roles and responsibilities. And then it's also really beneficial, if you can, to share what that interview process looks like. Is it a one-stage interview? Is it two steps? Is there an is there a task that might come up at the final stage? Who would those interviews be with? I think the more that you can put into that, the more you'll get. And we see a lot, you know, the rise of 500 people applying for a job and all of that stuff. And you know, I don't think we're necessarily going to get away from that completely just because of where the market is at the moment. But you can... it's much easier to disqualify candidates if you have really clear criteria of like, actually, they're based somewhere, they're never going to be able to get into the office 3 days a week because they're based in an entirely different continent, for example. And I think that in terms of the job descriptions, those are my kind of key things that I would say to look out for.
I can see, obviously, with the format of podcast, people won't be able to see this, but Wendy, as our chief people officer, is nodding very, very enthusiastically to all of that.
I also, Wendy, you know this way more than I do. Like, I don't have a HR background. I'm not a recruiter. I'm just someone that has found a real love for good job description.
But I think it's really important to be talking about it from the other side, you know, from the side of, you know, there's, you know, articles galore from, you know, recruitment specialists or whatever about how to do it. But, you know, you don't see so much of the experience that people are going through when they're applying for these roles. So this is gold.
And I also think, I think sometimes I'm conscious that I come across like I'm real, like the champion for the employee, and I am. But I'm also like, it benefits your business if you get the hiring right. So why wouldn't you want to put that effort into the hiring to get the right person?
Absolutely. And actually another difficult side of the industry. You mentioned about, you know, you've turned 40, and what are your views on ageism in the industry and what that sort of journey last year you know, the impact it had on you and your views?
So I remember very early on in my career when I was at Sky, I moved to the London office and I walked into the office and I think there was like 200 people on my floor. And I just remember thinking, where are the women over 40? And then I was like, yeah, well, I'm 25. By the time I get to 40, like we'll all be there and blah, blah, blah. You know, I just naively thought, oh, you know, it's just historically, you know, that's something that's happened or whatever. And then as I've got older, I am seeing a real shift. I think, you know, we obviously see people have families and maybe want to change careers and things, but I also see a shift in how we're treated. It's like any other job, any other industry, having experience is good. Whereas I'm especially at social, specifically marketing generally for sure, it's almost seen as, well, now you're out of touch. Like, it's almost like, well, I couldn't possibly get social because I'm not 22. And it also gives, which one is frustrating because it also, like, it's not just 22-year-olds on social media. Like, my granddad's on Instagram. You know, I find that narrative really reductive. But yeah, the notion that you're kind of, your value drops as soon as you turn 40, you've fallen off a cliff, there's this kind of slightly invisible, there's this like invisibleness, which I really didn't expect to feel. And I've had it in the comments on TikTok sometimes, you know, no one over 40 should be working in social.
Well, they're wrong.
I never get upset by trolls, but those comments really like get to me because I'm just like, it's such a ridiculous view. And I think it's why I continue to show up just as showing up as a woman over 40. Like, and also I think it's why I think my age is a blessing. But I think aging is an absolute blessing and it will never be seen as a bad thing on my part to be getting older. I think it's really wonderful. And if I feel like the way I feel at 40 versus 30, if I feel like that at 50, at 60, then absolutely amazing. But I think it's why I am very vocal about calling out bad practice because I kind of want to show up as that person that I probably needed at 25. And also I've got the confidence to say things. You know, we've seen Greg Wallace in the press recently talking about women of a certain age, yes, calling out, you know, his bad behavior. It's like, because we've got the confidence to stand up for what's right. We've got the experience to know that that's not right. So yeah, I won't go down a Greg Wallace rabbit hole. But
yeah, don't get me started. Let's just park that. But yeah, thank you for continuing to use your platform, because I think that's the key thing about when you do create a platform and then to use it for good, which is I know that you're a big fan of what we're doing with the Make Social Better revolution as well, and I think you know, as long as we all keep holding up a mirror to the industry, that's when we will see change. So yeah,
I think it's like, I mean, it's, I guess being 40 is this really wonderful place of, I've got women that are older from in the industry that I can learn from. And if I've got a problem, they've probably experienced it before. So there's that. But then there's also, you know, I mentor much younger women in the industry who are telling me their experiences and things. So it's a really nice spectrum, you know, everyone from 23 to 60 plus within my network, within the industry, which I think is great.
Yeah, we can all learn from experience, you know, 360. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So let's move on to where we get a little bit more personal. And I'm going to throw this back to Wendy with our sort of quick fire questions.
Great. We'll ease in. So okay. We'll start with, what's your idea of a perfect weekend?
Oh, it would definitely involve travel. So I've actually just come back from a couple of days in Margate, which was so lovely and just so super relaxing. I love being near water. Yeah, definitely travel, probably a European weekend somewhere.
Nice.
Really lovely hotel, lots of wine, lots of wandering. My diary during the week is always generally pretty packed. So I love the idea of just not having an agenda and just wandering and seeing where things take me. And actually I don't make New Year's resolutions, but one of my goals this year was to go away at least once a month. And I have done that. And then
well
stopped.
Done.
And to the point where it's maybe a little bit too much. But yeah, I think I'm quite a creative person. I get my inspiration from all lots of different sources, and travel is always one of those. So yeah, probably a weekend away somewhere.
Fantastic. If you were walking on stage, I don't know, maybe you're about to do a talk or something, and there's an intro track playing, what would it be?
Oh,
the song that immediately came to mind, just because it always makes me feel fun and I think it would invoke a really fun feeling and level of confidence, would be September by Earth, Wind and Fire. Just like whenever I hear it, it just makes you feel so good. And I think whenever I don't know if you've seen Amy Cuddy's TED Talk where she talks about power moves.
Yes, and kind of, Superman pose and
all of that stuff. And I absolutely channel that whenever I do any public speaking, that's what goes through my head. And I always tell myself, how do I want to feel when I come off the stage, and try and feel that now? And that song would absolutely help that.
Love it.
Now, I know that from sort of following you, I know you're a bit of a foodie and obviously you've been traveling a lot. Do you have a favorite restaurant or food experience?
I recently went to my first ever 3 Michelin star restaurant, and oh my God, it was quite an experience. I went to Core by Claire Smith, which was just really wonderful. So I'm not someone that's materialistic. Like, I don't spend my money on clothes, shoes, whatever that is. I spend my money on experiences. I love doing things with people. So that's been a highlight recently. And I just love, I love spending my time like over really long lunches, long dinners, like having really good conversation with friends. One of my absolutely like terrible traits is I am an awful communicator on WhatsApp. My friends can go for weeks without hearing from me. But then when I'm in the room and having a like dinner, I'm all ears, my phone's away. And I think that's how I connect with people a little bit better.
Yeah.
So what I hopefully lack in kind of communication skills with my friends, I make up for in kind of good restaurant choices.
And it is a great way to do business as well. Let's face it. Yeah.
I think it's why I make video content rather than write, because I just prefer talking.
Mm. That's working.
And I love
you.
A voice note.
Okay, here's another one for you. How would you fare in a zombie apocalypse?
I think whenever I look back on any sign of tension, I've always just gone head in and kind of confronted it. So I think I'd be all right. I think I'd be quite protective of others. And, you know, if anything, making content and standing up for kind of bad practices in the last year has told me that I don't tolerate shit. So, yeah, I think I'd fare okay.
How would your friends describe you?
I actually know the answer to this because I did an exercise last year where I wanted colleagues to describe what it was like working with me. And fun came up a fair bit. I think I always try to bring humor into what I do if I can. You know, life's too short to kind of be miserable. So hopefully fun would come up there. I think I'm quite a passionate person and fairly creative as well. And I think when we think of creative people, the default is like, oh, they're an artist or a designer. Actually, it's a problem solver. It's someone that, you know, looks at things differently. And yeah, I'd say hopefully fun, passionate and creative.
And what's your favorite karaoke song? Do you have a go-to song? I like to ask everybody this because Wendy and I love a bit of karaoke. It's a big theme in Social Element.
I have quite a career-related like karaoke story.
Oh, go on.
Karaoke has featured a lot in my career. So when I worked at Sky Up in Manchester, every payday we would go to Lucky Voice. You know, there's like karaoke.
Yeah.
And we would hire it out for a couple of hours as a team and we'd sing karaoke. And one of the guys, he picked a song for everyone, and his dad was a vicar, so he asked me to sing Son of a Preacher.
Brilliant.
And later on when I worked at Netmums, again, we used to do karaoke loads, and they would always, the team would always get me to sing Adele because I cannot sing. I am an awful singer. I love karaoke because I actually never know the words, so to be able to read it is fine. I'd always sing Adele, Someone Like You, or some kind of like Spice Girls, Destiny's Child. There was always like a girl group that I would happily, get involved in. But yeah, I absolutely love karaoke. Any excuse, whenever I've done it with, you know, teammates, I'm all for it.
I love that. Fantastic. Lauren, it's been such a treat to have you on the podcast. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for sharing and wishing you loads of luck with what's coming up in 2025.
Thank you.
Anything that we haven't asked that we should have asked, or any closing thoughts from you?
Yeah, I guess if there's one thing I've learned in the last year, it's to not be afraid to stand up for what you think is right and not be afraid to challenge status quo.
I think it can feel quite scary to put your head above the parapet sometimes. But I think what I've seen is good stuff can come from it. So yeah, don't be afraid.
You've been listening to Genuine Humans, brought to you by Social Element. If you loved what you heard, remember to rate, review, and subscribe.